Hi, this is John Barnes, and you're listening to Cop On.
Whoa. Hello, everybody. We're live on YouTube, and to everybody listening in the older audio feed, hello as well. Absolutely barnstormingly wonderful to have you with us. I've got to move something on YouTube because my windows are all out of sync with what they should be, but now I think it's all right. Get your chat and get your comments in. I'm on the road to 500 subscribers. There are 274 so far, and I'm very excited. Thank you so much for the 274. That's 273 more than I thought, because my mum was pretty much a given that she would subscribe. So hi, mum. And hi to the 273 others and whoever else might watch on YouTube and all the millions of you, billions that listen worldwide. Cop On goes out to 33 countries worldwide, according to just the Spotify figures. So whoever you are, wherever you are, welcome. Welcome. I'm delighted to be joined by three absolute heroes from the Liverpool FC sphere. We've got Abdul, who's with us. Happy New Year, Abdul. Abdul from Watch_LFC on Twitter. Abdul, I'm going to start with you. Just a quick question, because Manchester City, we didn't play, but they did. And very depressingly, very predictably, Kev De Bruyne came on, was absolutely fabulous. Eddie's a freaking idiot, if you excuse my language. I don't like to judge people and you know, so harshly, and people are complex, and he does improve players, he does do that, but tactically the man is an idiot. Kev De Bruyne came on and nobody picked him up. Here we are, complete amateurs, never coached a game in our lives probably, and what you do step one with Kevin De Bruyne on the pitch is you pick him up, don't you? Did you watch that game? Are you terrified of Manchester City being just behind us, hot on our heels? Has this season got second written all over it because Pep's oil cheats are going to leapfrog everyone and get four in a row? Did you sleep well since that match? Did you watch that match? Basically, how the heck are you? And how are you feeling about this title race?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Thanks for having me again. Glad to be back. It's been a while since I've been on this. Yeah, it's good to be back giving opinions on things, which I love to do. I would say the whole Man City thing. I was watching the match. I think we all were. It's got to that point now, isn't it? Second half of the season, the run-in is coming, and Liverpool fans are going to be watching every single Man City game, and Man City fans are probably going to be watching every single Liverpool game. It's an exciting time for, I think, the whole Premier League. To be honest, I think the top four, top five is still really tight, much tighter than it's been in the last few years. So I think football fans in this country, we're in for a very, very nerve-wracking couple of months as we go towards the end of the season. I think, yeah, you're right. I remember when De Bruyne was coming on, Newcastle also had substitutions planned. I think they were planning to bring on another midfielder, another body in there. And then they changed it and they didn't bring on a player. And let's just let, like you said, Kevin De Bruyne run on, just have loads of space. I think Pep Guardiola said after the match that he actually spent a lot of time talking to Kev on the sidelines to like try and figure out what his role was going to be defensively, because Kev was saying like, oh, he doesn't have enough in his locker to be doing a lot of defensive and pressing stuff. So he wanted to be more like just going forward, get down to the byline, putting crosses. And it worked out for them, you know. I think De Bruyne solidified his reputation as one of the best players ever in the Premier League, I think, with that little cameo.
Totally, yeah. What a player. Brilliant.
I'm a Liverpool fan, and look, I you have to put it up. Like, and I hope that Man City fans and Chelsea fans, United fans, do the same for Salah and Virgil and Alisson and Trent. You know, that is what the Premier League is. It's a league full of the very best footballers in the entire world, and I don't think it gets enough respect, actually. I don't think we see that represented at the Ballon d'Or ceremonies or FIFA Pro World 11s. Not much Premier League representation, but I think without a doubt we have the best players in the world in this league, and Kevin De Bruyne proved it in that session. Am I scared of Man City going forward? I did a whole long list of tweets on my account, watch_LFC, about how I think I'm going to approach this title race. And that question about am I scared of a team? And it's like, I'm not scared about anything in football, really. Like, I understand being nervous, but it's football. Football is something that brings joy to our lives. It's something that we enjoy. It's something that we look forward to watching. And I'm not scared of Man City. I'm actually relishing this title run-in. I want the chance to beat them at their very best, which I put out in a series of tweets, which many people didn't like. So I don't know if that's reflective of the whole fan base, but I'm really looking forward to it. I hope we have another classic run-in where we beat them, hopefully this time by 1 or 2 points, so that they know how it is. And let's go for it.
Yeah, it's a wonderful answer. It's a very, very good answer. There's so much to talk about in that. But don't worry about people, you know, throwing insults. As one of my best friend's brothers said growing up, you know, if Jesus came back from heaven, people would criticize his sandals. It's, you know, and it's very, very true. So Mick is with us. Mick from the Cop Height podcast. Welcome back, Cop Height X. Cop on is what they would say if we worked in marketing, but we don't. But it's just absolute delight to have you with us. Abdul was saying he relishes this title race. Are you enjoying it, Mick, the fact that we're even there in the first place, or are you just, you know, full of trepidation, but given the scars, the emotional scars of losing two leagues by a point to these absolute cheats?
Plenty of scars, plenty of emotional scars, but I think it's when you look back a year ago, to come back to yourself and say, oh, a year to the day, you're going to be top of the league by 2 points. you would have told yourself you were crazy, to be honest, because the way that we were playing in that middle region of the season was just, it was horrific when you look back at it. I never want to look back at it again, to be honest. There was like a tweet going around about like a year ago, a couple of days ago, we got beat 3-0 by Brighton. Klopp's going over to the away fans saying sorry and all that. And you're like, yeah, that was just a bad time, a really bad time to be a Red. But no, I'm enjoying it. I think we didn't know what to expect going into the season. Like the changes that happened, natural changes, and then the enforced changes with Henderson and Fabinho leaving, and then getting a new midfield in. We all thought it was going to naturally take longer than it has done. And I think the job that we've done, the players that we brought in, it's been incredible, really, especially like the last couple of games where we're missing massive, massive players, and that continues until Salah and Trent come back. So, I mean, it's the mentality that we've been showing to get through these games, even if we go 1-0 down. Any adversity that we're facing, we seem to have the answers, and that's a sign of a really good massive side. And I think that's the key things that I've been enjoying recently. Every game I'm going into it, I'm not worried. I'm more excited about how this Liverpool side are going to... I'd like them just to start the game well, to be honest. I'd like us to just like half an hour, just score, just get a goal, lads. Just do something where it's going to be a little bit of a positive for us. But we always seem to do it the hard way. We always have. Weirdly enjoy that in a weird way. It's always nice to win when you've been playing horrifically and then you end up winning it. But I think City were always going to come back, weren't they, to be fair, once De Bruyne come back. And of course, like you said, only comes back on like a superhero, gets a goal and an assist, and you're like, what's going on here? Haaland's going to be back soon, so they're going to score even more. But we just need to keep going. I think that's the thing, and I think that's what's been happening this season so far. I mean, all of the stuff around it, like on social media, where you're seeing like how Webb talk about handballs, Odegaard, and then there's obviously the Diaz stuff, and it makes you... very annoyed, shall we say, that we could have been further away, we could have been further in front, but you have to take it as it lies. And I think we've got a massive chance. We're halfway through the season and we're top of the league, and I think that in itself is a massive, massive boost, and it should be a massive boost for us going into the rest of the season.
You're absolutely right, and you're absolutely right to put it into context. I mean, from where we were last year, you've got to just remember that. I mean, it was awful season last year. We ended with 67 points, Klopp's lowest in his in a full season. I mean, when he took over, we ended up on 60 points when he took over in October. I mean, it is remarkable, Jack, what Jürgen's done to this team this season. Nigel, we've got another person joining us. Nigel's here. Let's let Nigel in. Great stuff. And as Nigel joins us, Jack, I want you to talk to me about your feelings about this season. You know, are you serene? Are you just relaxing? You've got a jacuzzi every night, and you're just watching the replays of our comeback victories, and you're chilling out with a cup of tea in the bath, and a sort of, I imagine you've got a sort of El Pacino in Scarface situation where you've got this massive sort of dugout bath with a massive TV, and you're just watching the replays, interviews with Alexis McAllister, just thinking he's gonna absolutely rock. Around the clock against Bournemouth. I don't know. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I think you'll be hard-pressed to find a prophecy like that in a boot, won't you? But you never know. You'll find one, maybe. Couple, probably. But yeah, it's as Abdul and obviously Mick have already mentioned, it's going to be a whirlwind of emotions, ups and downs as well. I think, obviously, us being on all social media platforms as well, and the content we all do, and it's difficult not to shut out the noise. I think it's modern day media as fans anyway. We know how important even a dropped point is, 2 points dropped when you are against Manchester City. But if you can't enjoy these years under Jurgen Klopp, stop being a football fan, mate. I say to everyone, even if we do miss out in the league, it'd be disappointing. But we're very blessed, and we know the difficulties this team has come under in the difficult moments under Jurgen. But we that interview that he gave last year, then from the report, and he was questioning whether Jurgen Klopp, he asked him, are you able to come back from this? And he said, yeah. We all have trust in Jurgen, obviously. And made up, I think the one thing that done my head in last year was not just in Jurgen, but in terms of the whole team and was the tactical aspect in terms of making substitutions. But I think the response time this year, it helps when you've brought in the likes of Endo, who you've been absolutely amazing as well. He's done far better than I and probably a lot of us anticipated. But when you have the whole squad back, the list goes on. We've got so many injuries. Even if we can get a 10-5 game period out of Thiago at the back end of the season, he can be extremely instrumental to this team. McAllister, Robbo, both fullbacks, everyone's back. And then you add that to the youthfulness within this squad. Giroud Kwanzaa, I know everyone was on about yesterday on socials about Levi Caldwell. Why? When we've got Joao Quanta there, we've literally saved £50-60 million. If he continues his development, he is Van Dijk Mark II in Jurgen Klopp's own words. So if he stays fit, we've got a hell of a centre-half there. But I'm just loving that we've implemented that midfield so quickly in this second period of this Jurgen Klopp times two team, or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, it's amazing. And if we can get a long-term number six, if Pochettino comes back to full fitness, great. But if there's one on the market that we can bring in, and we've got one of the best attacking lines in European football, and we could probably do a show on the Nunes debate, but I think I love him to bits. I think he's doing absolutely everything apart from putting the ball in the back of the net, but he's contributing to the team from a tactical sense, making the runs, assisting as well. And when the penny does drop, I think he'll be getting bloody 5 goals a game. So it's there's a lot of positives, in all honesty, for me, with every element of Liverpool.
I love that, Jack. So Jack from Anfield Road TV, do check out Jack's content. It's absolutely brilliant. And Jack, you're such an optimist. It's absolutely brilliant. Nigel's with us. Nigel, welcome. Welcome back. Lovely to have you with us as well. We're going to talk about Bournemouth, moving into Bournemouth. Jack mentioned Darwin there. As you know, someone who's not exactly firing, but he's doing brilliantly. I'm not going to talk about Darwin if you want, but a goal or an assist every 92 minutes is absolutely wonderful. And anyone who's writing him off, I don't know, send me an email, coponpodcast@gmail.com, with your reasons why you think Darwin Nunez is dramatically underachieving. And I leave your name and address, and I will arrange to send something round to your house to demonstrate what I think about your opinion. Nigel, Bournemouth, they're on fire. Actually, in the last, I was listening to Mick's excellent Copite podcast, and he was saying it in the form table over the last 6 games, Bournemouth are sort of second or third or something. They're doing really well, having won 4, drawn 1, lost 1. But if you actually look at the form table over the last 8 or 9 games, Bournemouth are top of the table. with 19 points, and Liverpool are second with 18 points from the last, I think, eight matches or something. I can't remember exactly what the stat is, but they're on fire, Nigel. They were absolutely abominable. They lost five of the previous six matches going into November, around about the 11th of November. And since then, they've been on absolute fire. Dom Solanke. Mark is in the comments on YouTube, and he mentioned Dom Solanke is on fire. And Mark also said in the comments that we have a good record against Bournemouth. We do, but not at Dean Court, because we've actually lost our last two matches there. One in 2016, which I'd completely forgotten about, a 4-3 win for Bournemouth. And I'm looking at the LFChistory.net. We had Loris Karius in goal, Nathaniel Clyne, Dejan Lovren, James Milner, Jorginho Wijnaldum, Henderson Lever, Emre Can, Bobby Firmino, Sadio Mane and Divock Origi. Talk about a hodgepodge lineup.
Karius dropped the ball onto Ake's foot in the last minute for the winner.
That's it. Yes, of course. It's coming back. Oh, no. Yeah. You've triggered something there, Nigel. And then the last time we played there, we lost there last season, 1-0. So it's not going to be easy, Nigel. How are you feeling about this game? Have you been losing sleep over it?
Not yet, but I might do. It's going to be a tough game. They're a decent side. You know, they're playing good football. They've bought into the manager. They bought into the start, I think, of this manager. But he's done very, very well. They're a decent side, well organised. They're going to take time to, you know, we're going to have to start well. We're going to have to kind of, this trend of us not starting well is not good, because we're going to get punished one of these days. Someone is going to take advantage of us not starting well, and we're going to get... We could be two or three down before we even realise what's going on. You know, we've been lucky the last couple of weeks or the last few games that it hasn't cost us games. And we've been decent enough to be able to finish the job in the end. But we're going to have to start well down in Dean Court. This is going to be tough.
Absolutely. It really is. It really is. I don't know. There were lots of questions about, you know, with our missing players and everything. The last time we played them, of course, was the round of 16 in the EFL Cup. Justin Kluivert scored for them. He equalised the Cody Gakpo goal to make it 1-1. And then Darwin Nunez, coming up with the goods in the 70th minute with the winner. That day, we had Kelleher in goal, Kwanzaa and Matip at central defence, Tsimikas and Joe Gomez at fullback, Endo, Curtis Jones and Harvey Elliott started the midfield. Mo Salah, Cody Gakpo and Szoboszlai started up front. So basically the team that we're going to bring this weekend, Abdul, is completely different because we're going to have Alisson in goal. And, you know, what kind of lineup are you going to go for, you know, at centre-back, for example, Virgil and Konate to keep Dominic Solanke quiet?
Yeah. I think that the lineup is, there's only really, I think we're down to our bare bones at the moment, which is... a bit concerning. So I imagine it's going to look Alisson in goal, and then right back Bradley, and then centre-backs Konate and Virgil, and then left-back Joe Gomez, and then midfield is the issue. I think McAllister and Curtis Jones probably start, and then you're unsure about the third one, because I think probably Harvey Elliott gets in ahead of Gravenberch. And then the front three, you're going to have Diaz. I think Diaz should play right wing, and then Nunez, and then left wing Jota. But I think there might be a case for starting Gakpo in midfield, just because if you look at our bench, we literally have no midfielders. We'll have Gravenberch on the bench, and then we'll have McConnell, who's the youth academy kid from the 21s. And then you've got Bobby Clark on the bench as well. So no real like... first teamers. So if you have the option of starting Gakpo, then you could put Harvey Elliott on the bench as well, so that if there's an injury, you can bring on Harvey or Gravenberch. But then if you start Gakpo in midfield, then you have no options for the forward line if there's an injury to one of the forward line. So yeah, it's just a really tight situation at the moment. And with
what would you do? What would you do? Would you play Gakpo?
I think I would play Gakpo. But saying that, I know he hasn't put in the best performances starting in that midfield position. So I am inclined to start Harvey Elliott. Harvey Elliott, I swear he scored a big goal for us against on a small pitch. No, that was Crystal Palace, wasn't
Crystal
it?
Crystal Palace, yeah.
So I think Harvey deserves his chance now. I think I am going to lean and go with Harvey. But yeah, just a bit concerned about lack of midfield options. If we get one injury to one of our, to McAllister or Jones, we literally have no six who can deputise. Yeah, so.
Exactly. We are skirting with disaster, flirting with disaster, and hopefully we'll be averting disaster by signing somebody. But you have Ibu Konate and Joe Gomez, of course, with their injury history, not great. And then, as you say, like midfielders, we don't really have a six with Endogan. But nonetheless, Mick, that's a strong team. That Abdul says as the starting lineups is, I'm feeling pretty saucy about that starting lineup. You know, no problems at the back, no problems in midfield if it's McAllister, Jones, and either Elliott or Gakpo, and then a front three of Diaz, Jota, and Nunez. I mean, I could watch those three attack on a football field all day, all night, every Sunday. Do you like that starting lineup, Mick? Would you go with someone like that with Gakpo in midfield or Elliot?
No, I got that Elliot. I think what Abdul said there, I think it's pretty much spot on what it's going to be. I think it's a bit concerning, like when we've not got that much. When you look on the bench and you're seeing McConnell's and Nione's, he's been on the bench a couple of times recently. And he's obviously a very talented kid. I'd like to see him play some games as well. Probably more next season now. But it's all about getting experience for the younger kids as well. And in a weird way, it's good for them. Like Bradley's had his chance. He's going to get another chance again because he deserved it off the back of the performance he put in. He was tremendous, to be honest. And up and down the flank, he was absolutely all over the place. And playing so well. We've got a good 11. I think it's all about, again, like I said before, the word mentality, it just always comes back to me because I think it's one of them that you need to, because you've got Gomez over on the left. I think when he first went in there this start of the season, or when he first went in there this season, he had a few games where he looked a bit shaky and we looked a bit unbalanced because of it. I think he's fixed those issues and I think he's getting better every game. And I think that's mad to say, but Joe Gomez seems to be getting even better and more confident and more assured in his own body, I guess, to go into those tackles and make those tackles that he needs to make. And I think having him on a right foot on the left and then you've got Diaz on the right, I think, again, isn't the most balanced side, but I think it's having those pacey players out in the wide area. That's why we're seeing Nunez over on the left as well, because up top he's great and a handful, but over on the left he causes just so much carnage for the opposition, even when he gets into those positions where I think even in front of goal now he needs to be better. That's clear as day. He needs to put more chances away, but I think he's weirdly cool in those like wide areas where he's about to cross it in. He seems to have that, be able to take a breath and pass it in and get those assists, because he hit 10 assists recently, which is incredible. So I think it's a great 11. I think it's just we need to hopefully start getting lads back soon. The likes of Robbo, the likes of Tsimikas, of course, when Endo and Salah come back, Trent back, hopefully ASAP, Zabar Zlai be back, hopefully next game. So it's just about working with what we've got for now. But like you said, there's more than enough quality in that 11. If we've got Gakpo and Gravenberch on the bench, you can come in. And if we need something the last half an hour, they're more than capable of producing for us as well.
Great answer. I've got to pick you up on the pronunciation, though. I've heard this so many times. It's Szoboszlai or Szoboszlai.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, I know. It's very easy because SZ in Hungarian is just S. Okay, there's no Z. It's just S. Okay, and the opposite in Hungarian, S is like SH in English. So, and as an example word is sushi, right? In English, S-U-S-H-I, but in Hungarian, S-Z-U-S-I. See? Sushi is the same thing. So, Szoboszlai, okay? So, it's a soft S and not a Z, and I will not tolerate a Z on Cop-On Podcast. Can you repeat after me? Szoboszlai.
It's the same as Gravenberch, though, isn't it? It's Gravenberch or Gravenberch. It doesn't really matter, does it? Let's be honest.
Oh, no, it does matter, Nick. How dare you come on Cop-On Podcast and tell me what matters, what doesn't matter in terms of language and pronunciation. Of course, we're all going to have our own accents when we speak and all that, but who cares about accents? But there's a correct way and a wrong way. You know, people, they, you know, imagine people calling you, you know, Mike Moraine, you know, it's Mike Moraine from the Cop-Hype podcast. Of course, you would let it go. Yes, of course, ultimately, you're correct. It doesn't really matter, but it's not correct, is it? You know, so stop. Bo-sly. There's an I at the end. So,
to be honest, though, it depends what day it is for me, because sometimes I do say it that way. It's just how it comes out of my head on the day. So,
well, I'm not judging. I'm not criticizing. I'm just after being correct. So can you repeat it? I'm a teacher. So. There's no S. So bo-sly.
Dom.
Again.
Yeah, let's just go with Dom.
Okay, there you go. Okay. Good idea, Nigel. Okay, yeah, Dom is fine. Yes, okay. I don't know. I love languages and I love trying to learn it. And the way that everything gets, so many people think it doesn't matter, and it doesn't matter. I'm just a pedant. But I do like to try and get it right if I can. I don't know. Jack, the starting lineup, yes, as we said, we're down to our bare bones. We've got very very little left. Actually, there's still a bit of meat on the bones because we've got a pretty tasty lineup ourselves, but Bournemouth themselves, they're missing some players. I've got a list somewhere. Let's just bring up my window with the Bournemouth injuries if I can. Their list is very big. They've got Tyler Adams, who's out until March with a hamstring injury, Ouattara, international duty. Ryan Fredericks with a calf injury, he's been absent since April. Lloyd Kelly, who we were linked with, has a hamstring injury, won't be back probably until February. Milos Kerkez, the same. He's a really good player, Kerkez, left back, very exciting young left back. But he's out with a foot injury until the 1st of February, according to this website. Semenyo is also on international duty, which is good for us because he's a wonderful player. I really like Semenyo. He's found a consistency this year. Sanezi is also out. He's been a big player for them with a one-match ban. He's suspended after collecting his fifth booking of the season. And Hamed Traore is also out. He has an illness, which actually is malaria. So get well soon to Hamed Traore. It's very sad that people get malaria. So their injury list is very long and they've got some key players out, Jack. But what have you made of Bournemouth under Iraola? They're going to play some strong players. I really like Alex Scott. I like lots of their players. But have you been watching them, Jack?
Yeah, a couple of times on Match of the Day, mate. Not a massive avid watcher, but I think you've massively surprised me, mate. Obviously, off the back of sacking Gary O'Neill, I think a lot of rival Premier League teams were looking around each other going, well, a bit harsh. But I think Jamie Carragher's on Monday Night Football at the beginning of the year, and when he was speaking about the one of the people to watch was Iriola. Obviously, the manager then, anyway, he's come in and adapted to the Premier League really quick. Obviously, the language barrier for most foreign players or managers, it sometimes it's hindered them, but he's took upon himself to really take the ball by the horns, really, and play extremely well. Clive Ayrt, obviously being all around the gaff, being in Italy, being in, obviously not quite as good as his dad anyway, but you've got a couple of good players there. Dom Solanke, is he having that period that Dominic Calvert-Lewin did have under Ancelotti, a good 6-month spell, and then looking to very much shoot off? But it's going to be one of them, in all honesty. The sounds. What, how many points are they on now in terms of the league table? The thing is, they've spent a lot of money. I think it was Michael B. Jordan's got some percentage in the football club or whatnot. They seem to, it's a new facade now in the Premier League. Get a couple of American superstars, NFL players or actors, and pay into, it's the cliche thing in Hollywood now. You want to slice the pie. The 12th now, where are they? Yeah, 9 points above the relegation zone. I think a lot of people might have had them to go down. But I think to be sound, and obviously, as the lads have alluded to, one defeat in the last nine. So it's going to be one of them. It is going to be one of the most difficult games we've had in recent weeks. And we've just got to be up to, as the lads have said, get a nice early goal and start taking our chances. I think we'd have no issues over the last couple of weeks when we have dropped points, as we create so many chances. But as the last 2-3 weeks have showed, when Liverpool have played, teams haven't really, that Fulham game, Fulham should have really been 2-3-0 up before, obviously, we got our two goals anyway, the back end of the game. And he didn't kill us off. And hopefully we kill off Bournemouth in the first 20, 30 minutes. But yeah, massively impressed by Bournemouth, mate. I think to be sound, a bit solid mid-table finish for them this season.
It's a great answer. And it's, yeah, great stuff about Bournemouth. Yeah, I mean, they have really been the surprise package of the season. There's normally one surprise package every season, and it's been Bournemouth this year because they've been really very good. But one thing that gives me heart is the fact that when they come up against attacking teams, Nigel, like Arsenal, they lost 4-0 to Arsenal back in September. You know, they lost 3-1 to Spurs, although that was away from home. It's not going to be easy, as we've said, because they've won three of their last four home matches. Their home form is really good. Their home form against us is actually really good. And I was looking at a Bournemouth forum where their fans have been feeling, you know, that some of them are saying, well, we've got too many injuries. We should get spanked. And other people are, you know, saying, well, this is a really good time to play Liverpool because Liverpool don't have Mo Salah and they don't have Endo and lots of other players. They Imad Szoboszlai, note the pronunciation, as someone who's, you know, who will be missing. You know, it's interesting to go on opposition forums and look at what their fans say about us. But Bournemouth, what do you reckon to them, Nigel? I mean, you know, their style of play, do you think that, you know, our attacking style should work against their attacking style, and we should, you know, the quality of our players should just shine through, and we should come away with 3 points.
Well, you can never say it, can you? As far as I'm concerned, you never, can never say it. What we need to do is we need to get our high press on. We need to stop them getting the ball up to Solanke. That's the thing. If we can stop their midfield from influencing the game, I think I personally play Gakpo and leave Harry Elliott as a possible impact substitution, where he seems to do a little bit better in games. I play Gakpo because of a little bit more physicality and possibly a little bit more pace. Possibly even when we haven't got the ball, I know the lads will work back anyway. Our forwards will kind of work back, but try and play maybe even channel two down the middle and play one behind, kind of to give us an extra option and kind of spread them out a bit. But like pull Diaz in from, say, the right wing, play Nunes on the left, and pull Jota and Nunes into more narrow positions, and possibly pull Diaz in behind him as a kind of a playmaker, just to give us another little bit of an option maybe at times.
With overlapping fullbacks, you mean? Like with Conor Bradley attacking?
Okay. Kind of leave a little space in behind, and you kind of float as a playmaker in behind for Diaz, maybe something like that, or one of the other strikers. I think you'll have to play Jota, and you got, well, whichever wing we're going down, this player on the left, on the right, on the left or right, tucks in, and you go two down the middle then. But we've got to stop them in the middle, I think. Solanke's a very, very good player. We need to stop supply. Cut it off at source and don't give Solanke the chance to get the ball up front. I think that could be key for us. Like I said earlier,
A lot of that would be counter pressing, though, wouldn't it, Nigel? I mean, which is why you can't play. Now you're testing me because it's Dutch. Gravenberch, if you prefer. Yeah. But that's why play. You know we can't play him, can we, Nigel? Because he doesn't have the dynamism when we lose the ball. I think
it might come in next season, but it needs work.
Yes.
I think we might lack a little bit of pace with Cody Gakpo or with Harvey Elliott, but I think just a little bit of physicality that Gakpo gives us.
It's a good point with defending set pieces and things like that as well, and attacking them.
They're a decent side, so very dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, just for his height and stuff. Yeah, I mean, I think Cody Gakpo he could also improve his aggression in set pieces and things. He seems to be, like, you know, a bit of a nice guy, you know, maybe feeling a little bit awkward with his height as opposed to using his height and using his body as a massive stick from which to suspend your yurt.
I'd love to see him carrying the ball more, to be honest. You see him sometimes when he carries the ball, and he's a threat.
He's brilliant. Do you remember when
he carried the ball when we got the, what goal was that? He hit the ball and it went Trent's winner against Fulham, when he hit the ball out, when he was out on the left hand side, and he took the ball basically off, was it Gravenberch? I can't remember who it was. He took the ball off him. It was Endo. He took the ball off Endo and started running, ran about 20 yards and hit this great shot, and then we got the second ball back over and he scored. And he does that sometimes. When he carries the ball, he's a major threat. Just driving into space. Like, you know, if he can get him working with the ball and you know, get our lads on the ball. We're a much better team and we're good off the ball. But when we have the ball, this is when we're at our most dangerous. So
I agree. Yeah, it's like that. Someone at the door. I think it's the babysitter. So she'll be coming in. You'll be hearing some screaming babies soon, probably. But there you go. I totally agree. And I'd like to see Jota getting the ball in deep like he did in the second half the other day against Fulham as well, and driving at them as well. And if you had Gakpo and Jota both driving from deeper, instead of just staying up and being a little bit, you know, being marked out of the game. But it's going to be tough. And as you say, the midfield battle is going to be tough trying to stop them. Alex Scott is a really good young player. He's 20 years old, English player. Keep your eye on him. Really, really talented. But anyway, Abdul, let's zoom away from Bournemouth a little bit, because we've done the lineup that we want to see. We talked a bit about Bournemouth. We're all feeling pretty confident. Let's just sort of, you know, look at other stuff that's going on. And a big story this week was Jordan Henderson, not only signing for Ajax, but also not getting paid or something in Saudi Arabia, which strikes me as bizarre. And in our group chat, group chat on WhatsApp, if anyone wants to join, please send me an email, coponpodcast@gmail.com. In the group chat, Paul was saying, very good point. He's like, Paul cannot get on board with everybody taking the mickey out of Jordan Henderson, because Jordan Henderson deserves respect, is one of our, you know, former captains, and he led us to trophies and things. And I do totally agree. But at the same time, I do see why it's a little bit funny that Jordan Henderson, what happened to him. But no, I mean, when you actually, you know, think about what it's like to be him and what happened to his career, I'm not going to hold anything against Jordan Henderson. But what do you reckon about the whole situation, Abdul? What do you reckon about it?
Oh, well.
Big question, sorry.
Yeah, it is a big question. I'll preface this by saying, funnily enough, my brother actually met Jordan Henderson the other week. Like, literally.
Oh, wow.
Last week, exactly. My brother works in Selfridges in Manchester. He's a student at uni in Manchester. And Jordan Henderson was just in Selfridges, and according to my brother, he was just like acting like a normal human being, like didn't have like a whole detail of people with him, which he wouldn't, I guess he's a footballer, he's not like a politician, but like just strolling around Selfridges and nobody recognized him. And my brother just walks up to him, just like, "You Jordan Henderson?" He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "Oh, can I take a picture? My brother Abdul is the biggest fan. He's one of your biggest fans in the world." And that was a lie on his behalf.
Okay.
I think with Jordan Henderson, I think it's absolutely right that we recognize that he is, and I've made the argument before, that he is possibly a better captain for Liverpool than we had in previous captains. I don't want to say the name because I know.
Go on. He's more of a captain than Steven Gerrard. That's a good argument to have.
I said that there is an argument to be had that.
Yeah, there is a conversation to be had there. Absolutely.
Yeah. And he deserves so much respect. Like, he definitely was a key reason why this Klopp team is what it is. Klopp is a great manager. You know, he injected this energy, passion, intensity. But if he didn't have Jordan Henderson, who naturally had the intensity and the passion anyways, and if he wasn't there to help Klopp direct that into the other players with his leadership skills, his constant talking on the pitch, his professionalism, the way that he takes young players under his arm, you know, Jordan Henderson was a massive, massive part of our success in this team, and a massive part of our football. You know, his pressing and his energy allowed other players to, you know, show their best, specifically Salah, because on that right side of the channel, that's where Jordan Henderson did his work. Let Salah get forward, score goals, let Trent get forward, become the player that he is right now. So I have a massive amount of respect for Jordan Henderson and what he gave for this club. And yeah, I think Paul is right. Like, he shouldn't be derided too much. And that's the key there, too much. Because I think there is also a very valid argument that Jordan Henderson was, for years, for many seasons, one of the reasons why our team couldn't get to the next level, which I think we're starting to see now. People, I think somebody mentioned at the beginning of this that it's been such a surprise to see how well our midfield, even though we completely changed it, how well this all settled in and how we're already contributing to results and wins. And yeah, it is a surprise because, like Jordan Henderson was there for such a long time. All of those players were there for such a long time. And to change like that, it's not a small feat. But on the other hand, I'm not surprised in the sense that all of the players that we have in midfield now are very comfortable on the ball. They have very comfortable orientation. So receiving the ball from the centre backs, then their first instinct isn't just ping it back to Van Dijk because you're not sure what's over your shoulder. They can take the ball under pressure, turn, find a pass that goes forward. And Jordan Henderson, for many years, for me, I'd be watching the build-up and he would just kill the build-up time after time after time. And we'd have to build up through the channels with the fullbacks. And that's fine, you know. It led to us getting record points tallies and everything. But I always felt like there was a next step for us, an evolution that we could make. And Jordan Henderson was the hindrance from getting us there. So when he went to Saudi Arabia, I was very happy about it. I was glad to see, you know, we're taking that step to evolve beyond him. I did think that the way that it was handled was an absolute farce. And not many people know this, but it was actually Trent's brother, Tyler Alexander-Arnold, who organized that whole move. He's also Trent's
agent.
Yeah. Trent's brother was the one. So I don't know if he's going to pay back his commission that he made on that deal, but I doubt it. But yeah, I think the story is.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think the story is that when Henderson agreed to move to Saudi, he agreed to defer his payments because in the UK, our tax laws state if you come back to the UK within 2 years of moving abroad to do work, you're still going to be taxed normal income tax rates within that 2 year period. So I think he agreed originally to defer his payments until like the third year or whatever. But now that he's trying to leave, number one, he can't come back to the Premier League because they're just going to tax him massively. So that's possibly why he's gone to a European club. But also the story today is that he won't get any payment for what he did because the way that he's negotiated his release from El Etifak, it makes sense, you know. He came there for like 6 months. He didn't really do much. They're not high in the league or anything like that. And he's already bailing. So if he wants to get out of that, give them the money back, you know. You're not just going to get a massive payday and not really contribute that much. So I understand it from the club side of view. It does make the whole move for Jordan just seem like an even worse decision. But fair enough, he's going to one of the most historically storied clubs in football. I think the pacing of the Dutch league will suit him. And I think maybe he could even possibly learn a few things. And even at his old age, I think playing for Ajax, you know, they've got a very unique style of football. I think it could be an eye-opening move for him, which could help him. I think he's got his eye set on the Euro squad, mainly.
Oh, no, my Lord. If Southgate picks Henderson, I've never written a complaint letter in my life, and I'm not an England fan, but that's going to be my first ever complaint letter, because, I mean, that would be ridiculous. It's very interesting. It's a really, really interesting answer, and I'd like to bring Jack in about one of the things you brought up there because okay, really interesting stuff about the move and all that. Thanks very much. But if we're looking at Jordan Henderson's career, you brought up something really interesting because there is a sort of a dichotomy, if I can use a complicated word that I'm not even sure is correct in this context. But there is some kind of a contradiction between what Abdul was talking about, Jack, in that Henderson was a brilliant captain in terms of setting the culture. He was wonderful. He was a team player always, putting the team before his needs. And that's something that Steven Gerrard never had, I would argue. Not never had, that's too harsh. But like, he was very much more an individual, Steven Gerrard, I thought, whereas Henderson was bigging up other people around him and being, helpful in every possible way, you know, towards success and always ate the right things, didn't drink alcohol, you know, did all the difficult things that are difficult to do when you're in your 20s, doing it well.
He didn't punch any bouncers in the nightclub.
Like, he did not punch. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, as far as I'm aware. Yes. So
So there's that. But then the actual playing side, Abdul is absolutely right. I mean, there is another good argument to say that the fact that we didn't win a quadruple and we didn't win other things was down to the fact that we had sort of inferior players in midfield, including Jordan Henderson, that we could have upgraded on him. And in a sense, he may have cost us a couple of doubles. So I don't know. It's a complicated thing. Where do you stand on the whole Henderson situation, Jack?
Yeah, no, what Abdul's absolutely spot on. I agree with everything he said, mate. It's cat 22, really. He was a difficult character in himself, anyway, for the whole fan base. You'd either loved him or you loathed him, really, in terms of he wasn't, and I agree, if we replaced a Henderson with a player of the type of qualities that Kevin De Bruyne. If Kevin was in our team, we win every single league title, every single Champions League.
Yes. But sorry, Jack, but what about a player that's even like halfway good as Jordan, you know, because Jordan Henderson was in the lowest percentile in lots of metrics statistically. Like, he wasn't good at defending, he wasn't particular, he had one good thing he was brilliant at, which is progressive passing, but there were lots and lots of midfielders, not just the Kevin De Bruyne's of this world, who were better than Henderson in so many ways, according to the stats anyway. Do you think that we could have, had we replaced him with someone of an Endo style, then we would have won more? Because I think
Probably yes and no, mate, but this goes back to Jürgen Klopp's too much trust. I think a lot of us were saying last year. I think, obviously, there was loads of arguments that were happening behind closed doors last year, and I'm pretty sure Henderson was probably one of the main reasons for that. Him and Milner, he's a strong voice, strong character in the changing room, and I think Klopp just had enough. I think a lot of the whole fan base last year had enough, because... And it's difficult when you've got such great players like Henderson, and that the whole squad in the last 5 years, 6 year period have given so much for the football club. But there comes a point in time, even when the great 70s and 80s teams, players need to be moved on. And I'm hoping in the next 3-4 year period, now, Jürgen Klopp, when it comes down to the bare bones of it, yes, loyalty to players, but come on. Most important thing is Liverpool just win games of football and we start winning trophies. If it comes down 2 years, 3 years down the line, if Salah needs to be moved on, move him on. And don't keep hold of him for the sake of, we all love and adore him, though. But when that time does come, move him on. Bring in the next great player or promote someone in the youth squad that is capable of challenging Liverpool for league titles and that. But it's difficult. Very limited, I'll say the least, Henderson as a footballer. I think he'll learn quite a lot, especially the Johan Cruyff Arena. At the age of 16, 12 years old, these Dutch kids or young kids that play in that academy, it's one of the most difficult in the whole of Europe, like that and the Borussia Dortmund's. Stylistically, you're expected to dribble past about 20 players at the age of 12 or whatever. So it's Henderson probably... It's come probably about 10 years too late for them. He might learn a fair bit. Be interesting to see what the Dutch think of Henderson Hoofball. I don't think they'll take kindly to that, especially with them sitting mid-table in the Dutch league at the minute. It's time will tell. But history will look upon Henderson, as Abdul said, as one of our best ever captains. He led this team to greatness. And when the time come, it was a bit sour grapes, but it is what it is. He went and, well, we all thought he went for the money, but he's went for the free 6 month holiday to Dubai. he's come back and he's going to sunny Holland, which won't be too bad anyway. I think we'd all take that.
Apart from your lack of geography skills, because Dubai is in a different country, but I take that as a very good answer.
I saw a funny joke earlier. It's like Henderson's gone on a 6 month trip to Asia, and then he's gone to Amsterdam. He's like the most annoying uni student.
He's a backpacker. Excellent. Yeah, very good. Excellent stuff. You can just see him now in the corner of a coffee shop, Nigel, with a tie-dye t-shirt. Speaking of that kind of thing, I mean, I think it's a very good argument to be had, the fact that we have not dipped into the transfer market at times under Jurgen Klopp where the whole fan base has been asking for it. And in a sense, it may well have cost us. We're in a position now, Nigel, where, as we were talking about before, we're in a precarious situation with our injuries and potential injuries. We've got so many players out, 10 or 12, I can't even count. And we are relying on Konate, we're relying on Joe Gomez, we're relying on 34-year-old Virgil van Dijk, and we're relying on Alexis McAllister, who's got his own injury problems, has that only six, or Curtis Jones could play there, but we're down to the bare, you know, the threads, everything has been, everything's withering before us. Can we add some water to the plant? Should we add some water to the plant this January? And if so, who?
Yeah, we got linked to that guy playing in Germany, the centre-back.
Hincapié from Leverkusen?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. We got linked to him. Excellent, but I don't think we're getting him while they're in the Europa League and going well in the Bundesliga.
They're going just go title, back, aren't they? Yeah.
Just going back to Henderson for one moment, that was going to be exactly my argument. Mm-hmm. Very good leader, Henderson. And like, we had lost the European Cup final, we lost the Europa League final, we won the European Cup, then we won the league. And I just don't think that we strengthened enough to try and push on, because that time we finished third and everyone was saying, oh, Liverpool are not going to do anything, you know. And we ended up finishing third when we went on that great run with Nat Phillips and Reece Williams, and ended up finishing third with the barest bone squad I think I've ever seen from us. Mm-hmm. Now, this, what we have at the moment is kind of bare bones, but that was real bare bones. We played Henderson at centre half in one game. We played Fabinho a couple of times at centre half. He mightn't have been the greatest player in the world, but he didn't have a whole lot of backup. And it's like, we've got to, I think our club has to learn that a couple of more players here and there might make all the difference.
But that's where we are now, though, isn't it, Nigel?
Oh, absolutely. We could do, we signed Diaz a couple of years ago, and it was kind of out of the blue because Spurs were going to sign him. But I'd like us to go, I'd like to go in and sign a couple of players in positions where we're supposedly strong, but we have a couple of injuries at the moment, maybe another centre-half and a left-back would be handy. And that holding midfield player, which we've been crying out for basically since Genie left. And, and we've got to look at Wijnaldum as well, because Genie Wijnaldum completely switched his game. He was a more attacking midfield player at Newcastle, and he completely switched his game from a number 10 to a number 6 and did a brilliant, brilliant job for us. And we haven't
He was often number 8 more than number 6. Yeah. He could play number 6.
But he did switch his game. We've got Alexis McAllister now at the moment kind of switching his game around a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather square pegs, round holes and all that crack. If we could just
get a specialist six.
Relieve the stress on the squad a little bit with a couple of players, maybe just to give us a little bit more cover.
I think it would be essential. It would be essential. The number 6, especially. McAllister got 12 goals last season, Abdul. From an advanced midfield position, 12 goals. I think he might have taken penalties as well. But even then, releasing him into his more natural position further up, especially when Gravenberch is still struggling, or is it going to take time? We're not going to write him off, but we're going to give him as much time as he needs. But he's still, he doesn't look like a Klopp player yet. So, to relieve him, we've got to bring in a number 6. That's got to be the priority, right, Abdul? Who would you buy? Is anybody out there who you would buy?
Yeah, so I think it is a really difficult situation. I mean, if we play Bournemouth on Saturday and we get an injury to McAllister or Curtis Jones, I think we kind of have no option, but we have to go into the market. But I also understand why Klopp is in a he'd rather stick than twist moment, because I think the training video we released yesterday, Robertson's back, he's at least doing gym work again with the boys. So that says that he's going to be back very soon. Trent should be back before the Chelsea game. Thiago and Bajcetic are going to come back into training from 1st of February, apparently. Fingers crossed, touch wood, all of that.
The 6 then? Bajcetic especially, because he can still run. So we don't need to buy a 6. In your opinion,
it basically boils down to stick or twist, like a game of poker. Klopp is looking he's looking at the abyss right in the eye, and he's not blinking, and he wants to stick. He wants to stick with what we have right now. And I can understand it because, like I said, we've got a flood of players coming back over the next week or two. And then you signed a six who isn't even going to play a game, basically. Because we have a lot of bodies in midfield, basically. It's just that they're all either injured or at the Asian Cup right now. So, yeah, I understand why Klopp isn't wanting to go into the market right now. But, yeah, if we get an injury, I feel like we'll have to be forced to go into the market. And if we do, I really don't know who it is that I would want. I feel like the club are doing their deep, thorough analysis for the long-term sixth position. I think back to that season that Nigel was talking about where we had Nat Phillips and Reece Williams, we signed Ozan Kabak and Ben Davies. And Kabak played a couple of games. Ben Davies never played a minute for us. And because ultimately we went for those cheap options because we already had Konate earmarked for next summer. We're going to sign Konate. That's going to be our long-term Virgil replacement. We don't want to, you know, make a cheap signing and then miss out on Konate. So I think the club, when we missed out on Caicedo last summer and we signed Endo, they already
Tchouaméni as well.
Yeah, Tchouaméni. That's the one that really hurts. Tchouaméni, Bellingham. They could have been with us, you know. Guimaraes at Newcastle, he could have been with us as well.
Maybe we'll come back for them though. Maybe Tchouaméni, we're still working on him behind the scenes. Is that what you're saying?
And I don't know. I don't know who it is. I've kind of tuned out of the transfer market, so I'm not sure like who the new hot thing is on the market. I'm sure towards the end of the season, all of the tacticos will be like, oh, this kid in Serie A, he's tearing up all the numbers. He's great. Be like, yeah, cool, let's get him. But basically, if we are going to make a signing in January, I hope it's the signing that we're trying to make in the summer for six that we didn't make last summer because we went and got Endo instead. So that's what I'm hoping for. Or maybe Bajcetic is the answer and the club have put full faith behind him and said, we don't want to block his pathway. Bajcetic is going to be the answer. Let's wait for him to come back. Let's show some faith in him. Whichever way it works, honestly, I don't know. I'm just taking it game by game, really. If we need to make a signing after Sunday, basically, let's make the signing. If we don't, then fingers crossed, let's try and get through to the next game. Szoboszlai should be back before.
Who?
Szoboszlai should.
No. You said Bosch. No.
Szoboszlai.
Szoboszlai, like a fox is sly, okay? Sly.
Szoboszlai.
Oh, beautiful. Congratulations.
Nice. So, yeah, I hope he should be back by before the Norwich FA Cup game. So that will just alleviate a bit of pressure. But, yeah, honestly. I really don't know.
No, yeah, great answer. Great answer again. Thank you. Thank you very much. Jack, I'm going to leave the final word because we're running out of time. I don't know how much time you've got, guys, but do feel free to duck out if you like and whenever you can. But Jack, you know, where do you start? Are we going to, you know, are we sort of tightrope walking across Niagara Falls and there appears to be some kind of fire starting on the wire in front of us, on the cable in front of us, because this is like the injury that's coming, because we're about to have another injury, and it, you know, we're going to fall off and we're going to plunge to our doom in Niagara Falls. You know, is that the current situation? We're going to need to put out that fire. We're going to need to run there with the fire extinguisher and sign somebody, definitely. Or else we're heading for disaster. What do you think,
Jack? I think it was back to the point that I always mentioned with the Endo debate, lads. I think if we find ourselves 5 points ahead or behind Man City come what the end of May, and we're going, just what if we went out and bought that player that come into the starting 11? But it just all comes down to availability, as we all know. I think, as the history does show in the last couple of seasons, most big clubs very, very rarely they sell to one of the main assets midway through a season. I'd love it if we could bring someone in, whoever that is, as Abdul says, then sounds. The data lads are out there. It was quite telling that, and quite funny. It was a couple of weeks ago when Klopp was unveiling that the new Annie Road stand. He was asked, you know, jokingly about Caicedo and just said, basically said, we dodged a bullet there, in all honesty.
Caicedo?
Yes.
Caicedo,
doesn't really matter. He's not even worth 20 quid at this moment in time, so sod him. But yeah, whoever it is, mate, I'm hoping if we can bring in players in this window to strengthen us in terms of whatever we do this season, it massively will benefit us. But I just, like all of us, I don't want to come at the end of May and then 12 months down the line, just what if? Get them in now, Liverpool, and get them in Jürgen, and then that's make this team even stronger than it already is as well. And it just allows us, we mentioned with McAllister, I think a lot of people are very still 50-50 on McAllister. I've had loads of debates with my mates as well. I was like, boys, he's playing in the six. It's not his position. He can play there, but like with similar players we've had in the past, we will see the best of him when he's higher up the pitch as well. So it's going to be one of them. And it will come to a point where not a lot of people, especially on social media, will like it. But Klopp has used Jones, or the England national team have used Jones as a six.
He's so good as a six.
Yeah, so he can play there. I'm just waiting for that week when it does happen and Twitter's or X's heads all roll off. Up Curtis Jones, ask us, Mike Joe. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it, mate. Massive thank you for having me on, mate.
It's a real pleasure, real pleasure. Is there any other business, folks, before we go? I'm glad you're shaking your head, Nigel, because you did mention to talk about the referees, and there was a VAR thing, but I don't want to. I'm going to veto it.
Because just the fact that we have Simon Hooper for the second leg.
Oh, do we? Oh, good Lord.
Yeah.
Good Lord. You know, it's like it's a whole group of buffoons. What's the collective noun for a load of buffoons? I don't know, but they all are. A referee of buffoons. I like that. Very good. Excellent. A confusion of buffoons. Yes, absolutely. That's what they are, these refs. So PGMOL out. That's you know, my permanent stance is that, you know, they're a service provider. Get someone better. So we're not going to talk about refs, but I just want to thank you very much, everybody, for being with us. You know, it's been an absolute pleasure. And in the chat, sorry, I haven't had time to go through a lot of your comments, but thank you to everybody who's in the chat. So Mark Forrest is here. Panov Scouse has joined us. And Panov says that does anyone think anything will happen in this window? He's not so sure. And I think that's right. It's unlikely at this stage. Gary Richards in the chat. Tally-o, Gary. He says he wants Kone as a number six. Absolutely brilliant player. I would love that. I would weep with joy if we brought him in. Panov says McAllister lacks pace, and that's something that Thiago, obviously, as a number six, lacks a lot of pace, just easy to run by them. That's definitely a weakness. Alan C is in the house. Great to have you with us, Alan, as well, and Doug from the dugout. So thank you to everybody joining us on YouTube. Thank you to everybody listening in the audio podcast, audio feed, whoever you are, wherever you are absolutely adored by us here on Cop On. And so follow Anfield Road TV, follow at @watch_LFC on X or Twitter, follow at Irish Red 11 on Twitter. That's Nigel. Thanks everyone. You'll never walk alone. All the best, and we'll see you soon. Thank you.
Cheers, everyone.